I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a deep dive into how a union is making food deserts worse and ultimately hurting the poor and working class. Plus, Attorney General Nick Brown burning through your money opposing Donald Trump. And Seattle can clean up as much trash as it wants, but it won't help clean up the city's reputation. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our little show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Happy or unhappy tax day to all of you. For me, it has been quite a horrible tax day, but I'll count my blessings. And of course, I wore my favorite t-shirt, which says, "The IRS, we make money the old-fashioned way. We steal it." A gift from Nicole for my birthday, modeled off of a t-shirt my dad was photographed wearing many years ago. There was one thing that man didn't like. It was the IRS. And I'm sure he has some sort of tax bill that followed him to his grave. Hopefully I don't have to pay that. When your parents die, if they have an outstanding tax bill, does that go to you? If so, I'm doomed. Anyway, I hope your tax day is much better than mine. I hope that you got some benefit off of all the things that President Trump has done. And maybe you even get some money back today. That would be a wonderful thing. All right, we've talked about how unions are the mob, essentially. They're like synonymous. And unions, although they say that they work for working class people, too often their actions do the exact opposite. Too often, because their only focus, their sole focus, is what's best for the union. What's going to line the pockets of the union? And everything else is secondary to that. We're going to do a deep dive today with help from some wonderful citizen sleuths into one such example. So there's a headline in the Seattle Times. I also saw it in Puget Sound Business Journal. Winco plan for Seattle store hits a roadblock. So there is supposed to be, Winco purchased an old Sam's Club that's been vacant for almost a decade on Aurora Avenue. This is an area that desperately needs a grocery store. And so obviously it used to be a Sam's Club, perfect location for a Winco. So Winco bought the property, but they've run into a roadblock in being able to move forward with their plans to open there. This comes at a time in Seattle where there's been a ton of headlines around food deserts. And we talk about closures when they happen because it ends up being big news because you lose a grocery store in a neighborhood that only had one, and all of a sudden people have to go a mile or even more to their nearest grocery store. And there's been a lot of reasons in Washington State, in Seattle specifically, why grocery stores have been closing. There was a very high profile example of a Fred Meyer, and they're basically like, look, we can't do it anymore between the taxes and the business climate and the crime and the amount of money that we've had to spend on security and plexiglass to lock up everyday goods. They're like, we just can't do it anymore. And the city lost its mind. And they're like, how dare you? And even Bruce Harrell at the time was like, well, maybe, you know, we'll open a city-run grocery store in that location. And it led to just insane remarks like this from socialist Mayor Katie Wilson.
Affordable, healthy food is a basic right. We cannot allow giant grocery chains to stomp all over our communities, close stores at will, and leave behind food deserts. Together, we can build a Seattle where fresh food is for everyone, not just for those who can afford it.
So that's how bad things are when it comes to the need for grocery stores in certain neighborhoods in Seattle, is that the new socialist mayor is coming out and saying, what, we want to force them to stay open, even though it's not making sense to their bottom line. She and the former mayor, Bruce Harrell, talked about city-run grocery stores, which, as we know, that's the equivalent of doing bread lines, and it never works anywhere that they've been tried. So what happened with this Winco? And Winco's great. Winco's cheap. especially for working class families and the poor. WinCo's a great option. It is supposed to go in a neighborhood that desperately needs one. Let's read what the Seattle Times has to say about it. It says, 2 years ago, discount grocery store chain WinCo filed plans to remodel the building, which used to be a Sam's Club, and reconfigure the parking lot on Aurora Avenue North. But the plans encountered opposition from a neighborhood group for their possible environmental impact. Last week, a hearing examiner overturned the city's determination that the project would have no significant environmental impacts, casting doubt on the future of the project. Now, you might read that and think, well, that's annoying. One of these stupid neighborhood groups talking about environmental impacts. But on its face, if you read that, it doesn't make a lot of sense, right? This was, for a very long time, a Sam's Club. A big box store that sells a lot of food items already operated in that location for a long time, and it sat vacant for 8 years. The area really needs a grocery store. So are there really going to be any more environmental impacts now than there would have been when it was a Sam's Club? You might think this just doesn't add up, especially if the neighborhood needs a grocery store. Why would a neighborhood group be opposed to a grocery store? Let's read on, shall we? For a while, everything seemed like it was on track. The city conducted a state Environmental Policy Act process and found WinCo's plans would have no significant environmental impact. Then last fall, a coalition called Lake Washington Working Families appealed the decision. The group, which tried and failed to disrupt plans for another WinCo that was coming to Renton last spring, has no website and is not registered with the state, leading to online speculation about who exactly is behind the group. Carl Anuta, a Portland-based lawyer representing the coalition, said it's made up of King County residents. The coalition claimed the city's environmental analysis of WinCo's plans for the North Seattle site was inadequate and required further review. WinCo would have major traffic impacts, the appeal said, releasing pollutants into local bodies of water. Interesting. So you have this group that sprung up to oppose not one WinCo location in Renton, but a second WinCo location in North Seattle. And it's very murky who really is behind the group. They have no website. They're not registered with the state. They've got a Portland-based attorney who basically says, oh, no, it's just King County residents worried about what's happening. But what's interesting is this group, the Lake Washington Working Families, they haven't been opposing other grocery stores. There's been a whole bevy of grocery stores in the greater Seattle area that have opened in recent months, and they're not out there opposing those, even though they have a similar proximity to Lake Washington. If it's really about pollutants from, I guess, a grocery store and a parking lot going into Lake Washington, still doesn't make a lot of sense. So what is really going on here? Well, this is union mob stuff, and it goes deep, and it has been happening specifically as it pertains to WinCo for the better part of 30 years. There's a fantastic citizen sleuth on X. Absolutely follow them. They go by the handle Minty Hawk. And I want to give them a ton of credit, but we'll, you know, do all the fact checking with you and bring up the receipts of what they're saying. So they posted this thread that was just fantastic. And I want to go through it again with some of the receipts to back this up. They said, Seattle's hearing examiner just blocked WinCo Foods from opening in the old Sam's Club on Aurora Avenue North, a building that's been vacant since 2018. The SEPA appeal was filed by a group called Lake Washington Working Families. Sounds like concerned neighbors, right? Well, let's talk about a pattern. They go on to say, WinCo is the second largest employee-owned company in America. 145 stores across 10 states, 20,000 employee owners. Over 500 employee owners are millionaires through the company's employee stock ownership plan. They sell groceries cheaper than Walmart, no credit cards, no frills, bag your own. Minty Hawk goes on to write, there's one thing, however, that WinCo does not have. A UFCW contract. There it is. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union has been trying to organize WinCo for decades and has failed because WinCo employees don't want to organize. They repeatedly decline unionization because they don't want to risk their very valuable employee stock ownership plan. So the UFCW adopted a different strategy. If you can't organize the workers, try to block the stores. Minty Hawk said the playbook is always the same. One, A new-sounding community group appears shortly before a SEPA, or environmental appeal, deadline. The group files on traffic, environmental, or community character grounds. The group denies any union connection. WinCo says it's a thinly veiled union opposition. And this has been done over and over and over. And it's not conjecture from this person on the internet, this citizen sleuth. They provided receipts. You can find the receipts yourself using Google if you choose to do so. The union has been doing this against WinCo for, as I said, the better part of 30 years. And they have shifted their strategy over time. So this started in the early 2000s in places like California. There were a couple battles in California over a store, WinCo, that was supposed to go in Folsom and in Brentwood. So in 2000, in Folsom, the UFC local there ran a full campaign, and they weren't hiding it. It was the union opposed to the opening of a WinCo. And it was because they said that it wasn't a union store. So they came out very publicly in opposition. In Brentwood, they did things a little bit different. The local planning commission approved WinCo's construction, and then the UFCW appealed the project. But they did it as themselves, right? So they appealed the project as themselves, UFCW opposed to it. That was, again, early 2000s in California. Same thing was happening in Washington State in the early 2000s when it came to this union, powerful union, versus new WinCos that were being set up. So this was in Federal Way, 2001. UFC members came out, they picketed, they publicly vowed to keep going until WinCo left or joined the union. So again, it was more pressuring that we're going to stop a grocery store from opening unless its members decide to unionize. And these tactics continue, and they start to become a little more difficult to tie specifically to the union, and for reasons that will become clear, because it makes them look like asshats. It makes them look like they're anti-working class. It makes them look like they'd rather people starve and can't afford groceries if it means that it's going to cost them union jobs. So as an example, this is in Moses Lake, Washington. You might remember there was a bunch of drama around the placement of a WinCo or the opening of a WinCo around 2015, 2016 in Moses Lake. A group suddenly popped up. A stronger Moses Lake. They appealed the placement of a WinCo using this SEPA determination, again, focusing on traffic impacts, which is a common theme that you will find. One of the two appellants was Peggy Vines. She was the vice president of UFCW Local 1439. So, I mean, you're using SEPA impacts, traffic impacts, very similar to what's happening right now as we speak in North Seattle, but one of the appellants was a leader of UFCW. So you can see the pattern that has emerged and continued in earnest. Bellingham and Mount Vernon, two other locations where WinCos were met with some sort of pushback. And sometimes it's obvious where the pushback is coming from. They don't really hide it. And sometimes it's much more difficult to determine. For instance, in Mount Vernon, this from Minty Hawk, a man named Michael Frazier formed Citizens for a Sustainable Mount Vernon just days before a SEPA appeal deadline. When asked what he did for a living, Frazier declined to say. In Bellingham, a group called No to WinCo in Bellingham organized opposition, and in that case, they did it very blatantly because it's a non-union store, and the Bellingham Herald ran a column opposing the store, and the column was written by two members of the local chapter of the UFCW. This was also happening in Montana. Bozeman ended up getting a WinCo despite an appeal that happened, citing six residents that appealed, citing traffic impacts and small town character concerns. Ah, yes, nothing ruins small town character like a WinCo. The city planning department, when it declined that appeal, noted that all six appellants were employed at Albertsons and Safeway, which are both UFCW organized grocery stores. So when we look at this, all the things I tell you about, these unions have turned into crime syndicates, and really maybe back harkening back to the mob days when the mobs did run the union. So maybe it's appropriate. So we look at all these headlines around, and it's the left that talks about, oh my God, food deserts. It's horrible. That's why the city has to come in. It has to intervene. It has to prohibit stores from closing. Gee, I wonder why they want to forcefully have the city prohibit stores from closing. And that happens when it's a union grocery store. When it's a union grocery store, it doesn't even matter if the store's not making any money. We want the city and our new socialist mayor to come in and force that store to stay open. Because if it stays open, then all those union jobs remain. That's really the concern there. It's not that a Fred Meyer is going to close or whatever it is, and then you're going to have an actual food desert. They're worried about the grocery stores closing when they're the union grocery stores. And when a grocery store is going to open like a Winco in a place that desperately needs one, they're not like, yay, less of a food desert. No, they're like, no, close it. Don't open it, because it's not a union shop. So you have this union that, again, all the unions claim to care about the working class, claim to care about workers, but they only care about it when it's benefiting their union. And if you have a Winco, which, by the way, you have these employees who they get a buy-in to the company. They love being non-union because of that. They don't want to join the union. And even though they're working class grocery store workers, the union that represents grocery store workers would rather see them out of a job, literally unemployed, and neighborhoods have no grocery store for miles, because it's union first. It's always union first, no matter the cost. A million examples of that. I mean, you look at the Washington Education Association, one of the chief culprits of union first, that will scratch and picket for more money for teachers while kids suffer. That the stronger the union has gotten, the worse test scores are. Because it's not about teaching kids. The union doesn't care. It's about new union members being paid more so their union dues are higher. And this one is wild. And I'm glad people are finally getting wise to it, what this union is doing. Because Winco, of any grocery store that serves the working class and the poor, that's right at the top of the list. Low prices, going in an area of the city that desperately needs one, the only thing standing in the way is a union that's mad that they're not going to be union jobs. Absolutely outrageous. And again, a lot of credit to Minty Hawk at Minty_Hawk on X for bird dogging all of that and laying it out so well and easy to understand. All right, coming up next, Attorney General Nick Brown in Washington is just burn. Might as well take a match to your taxpayer money. Might as well take a match to your taxpayer money. And it doesn't matter that the size of the Attorney General's office doubled under the former Attorney General Bob Ferguson. They still have to go and hire outside counsel because they're suing President Trump that much. We'll go over the numbers. First, if you're a member or if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, rather, I always remind you to become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington because there are just so many benefits to doing so. First of all, they can help you on an individual basis. Don't know what forms you need, screening forms for potential tenants. Are you up to date on all of that? Do you not know? Well, they can make sure that you are and help you with that on a one-on-one basis. That's pretty cool. They also are down in Olympia advocating on your behalf during the session and doing the same thing at the local and county level when it comes to these really disastrous housing policies that have been pushed in recent years. And they have events across the state all year long talking about housing policy and broader political issues that I think are really interesting for anyone to go to. I've been to a couple of them. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org. It is Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right, let's see if I can do this in one breath. So Nick Brown is trying to out Bob Ferguson. Bob Ferguson's sole mission, his sole focus when he was attorney general before he now became governor, although I feel like his sole focus is still the same. Orange man bad, go after Donald Trump, try to use it as a stepping stone to higher office. So Nick Brown saw Bob Ferguson do that. He became the governor. So why wouldn't Nick Brown step into that office and just absolutely obsess over Donald Trump and try to sue Donald Trump more times than Bob Ferguson sued Donald Trump? A few of the things, oh my gosh, that's a long list. A few of the things, I'm going to take a deep breath, that he's sued the Trump administration over. Mail-in voting ban, birthright citizenship, Planned Parenthood, shelter for migrants, public benefits for migrants, ACA access, cutting disaster funding, education funding cuts, health data protection, clean vehicle program, machine gun distribution, public safety cuts, AmeriCorps, conversion therapy, scientific research and ed programs, attack on U.S. RAP, Department of Ed, dismantling, fake emergency energy. HHS dismantling attack on wind energy, unlawful conditions for K-12 funding, protecting libraries and museums, protecting election integrity, illegal funding to cut medical research, suing to stop ICE, federal employee firings, gender-affirming care, stopping Elon Musk's unconstitutional power grab, and federal financial assistance freezes. Few of the things that Nick Brown has sued Donald Trump over in his second term, which we are, what, 1.5 years into? Wow, it's going to be busy. And it's costing the state a lot of money. And by the way, the attorney general brags about this. He thinks this is literally the greatest thing ever. They have a Washington attorney general's federal litigation tracker on their website, where they talk about all the challenges to the Trump administration's policies. It says, as of April 3rd, which was the last update, Washington has filed 58 cases against the current federal administration to protect Washingtonians. Attorney General Nick Brown is leading or co-leading 22 of those lawsuits. The total amount of funding at issue in the cases is more than $15 billion. So he himself, as the attorney general, is leading or co-leading nearly half of the legal actions against the Trump administration. So that is absolutely taking up all of his time. He has no time left over to protect Washington residents, to go after some of the other things that the attorney general can do to fight fraud. Isn't he supposed to be, isn't his office investigating the fraud our whistleblower uncovered in the racist home loan programs? I highly doubt his office is actually doing that, considering how much time they're spending and resources he personally is spending suing Donald Trump. So our friends at the Center Square looked at this, and it's not just, so I remember interviewing Bob Ferguson back when I was a TV news reporter, when he started suing Trump like crazy. And one of the questions I asked is the criticism that, like, look, isn't this costing us a lot of money? And he would say they're staff hours. You know, these are salaried employees. So whether I have them on Donald Trump and they're working overtime or whatever it is, they're salaried employees. Well, that's not always the case, because they use a lot of outside counsel to take on these cases. And according to Center Square, the Washington Attorney General's office billed more than 34,000 hours on Trump lawsuits. Absolutely insane. That's since November of 2024, according to records obtained by the Center Square. More than two-thirds of those hours were billed within a six-month period. The 34,000 hours represent a combined 1,416 days, or 3.9 years of billable work. So in like 16 months, they've billed 4 years of billable work, specifically when going after the Trump administration. Citizen Action Defense Fund Executive Director Jackson Maynard was interviewed for this story. He said that's a significant amount of time, even for an agency with 800 lawyers. For comparison, a lot of private law firms have billable requirements for lawyers in the range of 2,000 to 2,400 per year. That's equivalent to 100 lawyers working full time on those cases. That's insane. So now we have the 34,000 billable hours, but the records, I should say, make it difficult to ascertain how much of that is counsel that's already employed by the attorney general's office versus outside counsel. It says, while the records obtained showed $30,000 in costs and fees, the AGO says the total cost of the billed staff hours is difficult to calculate due to the different hourly rates depending on the job and role, if an attorney, and their experience. So they're already have their staff, their dedicated staff, hard at work suing the Trump administration. And we know that they're billing an awful lot of very expensive hours. I mean, some of these attorneys charge like $500 an hour out to outside counsel that's getting rich off of our state's obsession with Orange Man Bad. It's just unreal. All right, speaking of the bad orange man, State Senator John Braun just got his endorsement. So State Senator John Braun, who's the minority leader in the state Senate in Washington, so the leading Republican in the state Senate, he's running for Congress in the 3rd District against the current holder, the Democrat Marie Glusenkamp-Perez. And this has been a swing district historically. It was held by Jamie Herrera Butler. Then there was some Republican infighting, like with Joe Kent, and it ended up that infighting caused a Democrat to win the seat, and she's been able to hold it. So John Braun got the endorsement of President Donald Trump. Here's what President Trump said on Truth Social. It is my great honor to endorse highly respected state senator and brave U.S. Navy veteran John Braun, who's running to represent the amazing people of Washington's 3rd. John is running against Marie Glusenkamp Perez, a true radical left extremist with a track record that reeks, capital letters, and who does not represent the values of southwestern Washington. Marie Glusenkamp Perez wants open borders, men playing in women's sports, transgender for everyone. What is that? What is transgender for everyone? Defund the police, and wants to take away your Second Amendment, meaning your guns. Sadly, she voted against the biggest tax cut in history and fought ferociously to knock out rural health care, a big factor in Washington's 3rd. In contrast, John Braun fights tirelessly to advance pro-growth policies, champion American energy dominance, and prioritize clean air, clean water, and clean soil for all Washingtonians. In Congress, he'll work hard to grow the economy, cut taxes and regulations, promote made in the USA, keep the border secure. John Braun has my complete and total endorsement to be the next representative from Washington's 3rd congressional district. He will never let you down. I always get a crack out of reading Trump's stuff. The random capitalizations really crack me up. Mm-hmm. Every like third word capitalized, transgender for everyone, which, you know, I get what he's saying. This also came out in tandem with a statement from Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. He released a joint House Republican leadership endorsement for, among other people, John Braun. He said, John Braun is a veteran, an America First patriot who will help us continue to deliver safe streets, secure borders, lower costs, and peace through strength. Talks about his time in the military. We're proud to endorse John Braun for Washington's 3rd District and look forward to working with him. Now, why are we getting this sort of play in, you know, a blue state from the president and from the Speaker of the House? Well, it's because this is going to be one of the most competitive races in the country. It has been frequently listed among the top 10 kind of must keep for Democrats and must win for Republicans. And it hasn't been blue for very long. Like I said, and I think had there not been Republican infighting because they wanted to oust Jamie Hoyer Butler because she voted to impeach President Trump. Had there not been that infighting, I think it would still be a Republican seat if Jamie Hoyer Butler were still in it. And John Braun has a great reputation in that part of the state. So I think that they're hoping that he has a good chance of beating Marie Glusenkamp Perez. Now, I will say, I think it's a really tall task because she's successfully convinced some people, I think, that she's moderate. And I mean, when she started off, she was not moderate at all. And she's a little quirky and stuff. But, you know, she's taking votes that, while we've maybe celebrated them on the show, I think have been very strategic to say, I realize it's a purple district. I want to make sure heading into the midterms that I'm not appearing too in like lockstep with the Democratic Party. Now, we see through that. I think the question is, will voters at large see through that? I will say, I want to see them in a debate. She is just an awkward, and look, by all means, that's how she is, act like yourself. But I've watched her debates before. They're very difficult to watch. Not her strength, let's say. Maybe not a strong suit of hers being in a debate. But I'm definitely curious, is it good for any Republican these days in Washington state to get an endorsement from Donald Trump when Trump's approval rating is just so underwater in a state like ours? So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, do you believe the endorsement from Trump will help or hurt John Braun? Nicole, help or hurt?
See, I'm not sure we maybe should have a third option that doesn't matter.
No third option.
Because I think in some places where there are multiple Republicans, then it can probably hurt or help depending on the state and the area. But in a state like ours, I mean, I don't know. I guess if you're trying to get those moderates to believe John is the moderate and not her, then it probably hurts.
Yeah, 62% of you guys are saying it hurts. I feel a little differently, only because this is a district that, again, was broken apart based on this infighting in the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And they weren't willing to coalesce around anyone. And I think Republicans will default to John because he's very reasonable. And John has a reputation as a moderate, which is why I'm kind of surprised that President Trump would endorse him. Because the whole far right crowd, they've called John a rhino all of these things. And so I think this endorsement helps bring people along who were part of that, rhino sort of crowd and mentality. Because you can't have any dissent among Republicans. Mm-hmm. So I think it helps ultimately. And John Braun is smart enough and he's surrounded by smart enough people where I have to believe that they had this exact conversation. Should we even get Trump's endorsement? Does that even help us here? But midterms are very difficult when it comes to the president, and gas prices aren't very good, and Iran might not be popular. So I'm going to go with help.
Okay.
Be a little optimistic. Let's see what you guys have to say. Again, 62% of you are saying it hurts. Kathleen, TDS is very powerful. It's a dangerous virus. Vivian, I hope it helps, but the district is purple these days. Eric Vasquez, I hope it helps. Marie Glusenkamp Perez is one of 13 House Dems that is in a Trump plus three district. D, I answered help because that's my hope. Here's the deal. Washington state government has made some super bad policies and laws. My hope is people are fed up with Democrats and decide to change their vote from blue to red. Seriously, we got to stop the insanity. Whitney, I think the Trump supporters are more likely to vote and would be the more likely group to appreciate his endorsement versus the folks who don't support Trump but don't like socialism either. So wouldn't be inclined to vote one way or the other. Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see. I do think it's always going to be. And the longer a purple district stays in one hands, the harder it is to get them out. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw that in the 8th. The 8th was held, which is, if you're not familiar with Washington State, had been a swing district for many years. I don't even think I'd consider it a swing district anymore. It's in the suburbs of Seattle to the east, and it was held by Dave Reichert for many years. He retired, and then Democrats came in and scooped it up with a really milquetoast candidate, who's now Congresswoman Kim Schreier, and she's been able to hold it since 2018. So she's been through a few elections now, and Republicans have thrown a lot of different types of candidates at it and haven't been able to get it back. So we'll see what happens this year. But if Republicans can't get it back this year, I don't know if I'm going to call it a swing seat anymore.
I was having this conversation with a friend yesterday, actually, because she was complaining about Trump and she was saying that it's becoming a little bit of an issue in her relationship. And
she doesn't like Trump and her boyfriend does?
Does, right? Ooh. Or supports some of it. And I just said, I hope that people going into this election, and I, you know, this message to everybody, I guess, but that you just weigh it, right?
Yeah.
So stop voting because you don't like somebody. Start voting for your values and your beliefs and look at them individually. Don't go by what the media tells you or what you see on social media. Oh, I don't like what he said about the Pope, or I don't like what he said about. And same thing with these, you know, congressional seats. I think that you look at the people and say, what's the past? What's the pros and cons of this? Mm-hmm. And vote for the people that you think have the most, or, you know, I guess similar values.
Wouldn't
and
that be
morals.
A wonderful world?
Wouldn't that be wonderful if people did that this time?
I just want people to stop voting against Trump. Like, the man is not going to be in office forever. And you're talking about larger issues the country is facing and who's, what party, what movement is going to deal with them in a better way. And so it's like, why?
Because he posted something, because he said, like, get over it.
Like, it's not even close.
Happening.
Like, high gas prices versus going back to an open border, not even close to me. I get it. High gas prices suck, but for the love of God.
Stop being a one issue voter, like the abortion or whatever it is.
Trump.
Stop being a one issue
voter. One person voter. Trump.
Yeah.
Trump. Just totally deranged. All right, we'll get to a double dose of unbelievable coming up next. First, we're into spring now. There's been a lot of rain. It was just absolutely pouring when I left home this morning. So you might be thinking about your roof. If it's showing some telltale signs of needing to be replaced, have our friends at Valentine Roofing come out and they'll just inspect it. And if they can repair your roof, they're going to repair it. They're not going to push you into a new roof. But if you have reached the end of your roof's life and usefulness, Valentine has a great promo going on right now where you can save 10% off your entire job when you add new gutters to any new roofing project. And that just makes sense. Replacing your roof, replace your gutters. And Valentine also offers gutter guards to help keep leaves and needles out for good, giving you an additional layer of defense against clogged and overflowing gutters. So in the month of April, reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing, get a free estimate and talk to them about that bundle, new roof, new gutters, and make sure you tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. Again, call 206-ROOFING. 206 Roofing to schedule your free estimate today. All right, let's get to the first of two editions of Unbelievable. Boop. All right, Governor Bob Ferguson. I do not know what his priorities are. I have a very hard time understanding what his actual priorities are because the decisions he makes, they make no sense. One day something's a priority, the next day it's not. One day he's trying to hurt jobs. The next day he's trying to help jobs. It makes no sense. The man has no idea what he's doing. So remember we talked on the show earlier this week and last week about how he's under a lot of criticism for vetoing $500,000 in the budget to be able to help local police departments deal with the real issue of organized retail theft. Here's the reason he gave for vetoing that money.
As Attorney General, I literally created a unit that prosecutes organized retail theft. Created a group of people who get together, law enforcement, retailers, businesses, to talk about how we can improve that. So there literally are more resources today to combat and actually bring cases organized retail theft because networking the AG's office than we ever had before. So no, I take it very seriously. At the same time, look, we've got a budget we have to balance. And you know, there were cuts in this budget. Our state agencies took $1 billion in cuts.
Okay, so he says, look, you know, we had to make cuts. We had to make difficult decisions. I care about organized retail theft, but this $500,000, no, we couldn't do it. So interesting that he just announced exactly $500,000 in strategic reserve funds to go to the expansion of quantum computing in Bothell. So INQ company is going to add 2,000 new jobs over 5 years, according to the state, one of the highest job creation totals in the history of the governor's strategic reserve fund. So he announced he's taken $500,000 out of that fund to support the expansion of INQ, a leading quantum computing company in Bothell. The facility opened in 2024 as a first of its kind in the nation. The company makes quantum computers that can offer exponentially greater processing power for certain complex tasks. The company is expected in this expansion to create 1,200 to 2,000 new jobs over 5 years. Blah, blah, blah. Funds were awarded. And it says the funds were awarded to the Economic Alliance of Snohomish County for building upgrades, workforce expenses, and other costs to expand quantum computing manufacturing. It's matched by more than $14 million in private investment. Okay, so we have $14 million there in private investment to try to expand this quantum computing. And then the governor says, we'll add $500,000 in taxpayer funds during a very difficult budget crisis at a time when he just vetoed that amount of money on organized retail theft. Now, usually, if the absent the other sort of factors happening in the state, I would think, okay, you know, $500,000 to help with job expansion wouldn't be at the top of my list for investments to criticize of state government, although you have clearly plenty of private investment. But he's doing this at a time when he just made decisions that are sending these types of companies out of the state at a record pace, that is stopping entrepreneurs from coming here, developers and job creators, AI, fleeing. So this, standing next to what he's just done, means nothing. It literally means nothing. And so he wants to put $500,000 at this to, I don't know, have some sort of headline that makes it look like he doesn't hate businesses and he's not trying to destroy our economy. And again, this has a ton of private investment, so they really don't need the $500,000 from the state. There's no private investment that I'm aware of besides the companies that are trying to stop their own stores from being ransacked. Like, if I'm looking at where is that $500,000 better spent at this point, it's in preventing organized retail theft. But he doesn't need a positive headline around that because he's got his organized retail theft task force and he desperately needs some positivity on the jobs front and the tech front. So it was just, oh, I'll give him $500,000 so I can have this nice headline. Absolutely insane. All right, let's get to our second edition of Unbelievable. Seattle can pick up the trash, but it cannot clean up its reputation. We're seeing that in a very real way. They can clean up as much trash as they want ahead of the World Cup. They're not going to be able to clean up the city's reputation in time. This was the headline from Como News. Seattle removes 5.3 million pounds of waste needles from the streets to prepare for World Cup. Literally disgusting. In this city that wants to preach to us about environmental and love the environment and all of these things, the fact that you have 5.3 million pounds of waste on the streets, and that's probably just the beginning of it, waste and needles, like, shut up about being environmentalists already, because that's genuinely disgusting. But they're doing this ahead of the World Cup. And again, it's lipstick on a pig stuff. because there are much broader issues that are going to hurt tourism for the World Cup that cleaning up trash at this point in time is not going to help. And there's much bigger issues at play when it comes to the state of downtown Seattle, all the empty storefronts, the lack of tourism, which I think had been on the rise, had been doing a little bit better. But again, I mean, when you have a city that's constantly on the news for, you know, bizarre random crimes, for the homeless crisis, for drug abuse and stuff downtown, that hurts your reputation in a way that cannot be fixed overnight. So last week, the Seattle City Council had an economic forecast meeting. Jan Duras is the chief economist for Seattle's Office of Economic and Revenue Forecasts. And the city is downgrading, giving a more pessimistic view of what international tourism is going to look like now and heading into the World Cup. So they've kind of downgraded their hopefulness on the issue. Here he is talking to the city council about this.
Recently, there have been some concerns that maybe fewer international visitors might be coming with higher gas prices. People will, in general, have less money to spend on travel, on leisure and hospitality. They might be less inclined to travel or more worried to travel. And so that's certainly a concern.
More worried. So making an insinuation that maybe because of Trump and ICE, which is an excuse the city has made before. There were Democratic lawmakers who were saying, Seattle's not safe. It's not safe to come here for the World Cup because of Trump and immigration. I think that was Monica Dingra, maybe, who was saying just insane stuff like that. And the city always beats around the bush. They always want to use every other excuse. Oh, gas prices are high. So if the World Cup numbers aren't what we expected, Trump, immigration enforcement, high gas prices, as opposed to like one of the most obvious explanations, which is Seattle doesn't have the greatest reputation around the world. And again, I'm reasonable. I think that all could have a factor. Do I think there's some people who watch too much MSNBC and CNN who might not come to Seattle from another country because they think that Trump's Gestapo is going to round them up on the streets? Sure. Do I think there are some people who might have traveled to the World Cup, but gas prices are really high and they're on a tight budget? Sure. But if you're going to say those two things, you have to also talk about the crime, homelessness, drug abuse issue. I mean, the city just admitted it cleaned up 5.3 million pounds of trash and needles. That's how bad the problem is here. So that's really fundamentally what bothers me. It's the picking and the choosing of what issues we say are hurting tourism. What issues are leading to a decline in the quality of life in downtown Seattle? The picking and choosing is what bothers me. Now I understand why his name is Jan, because of the accent there. He also talked about, this is a hilarious clip that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with tourism, but it sums up so many things. He talked about employment numbers.
We're seeing employment declines. The sort of a bad news here is that it's pretty much across the board. With exception for government and education and health services.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Does he even know what he's just admitted there? Oh, employment across the board is down, except in the government, except in education and health services. So if you work for the government in a city like Seattle that's progressive, no big deal. The government keeps growing by the day, even if as we have less tax revenue coming in. And then two most powerful unions in the city of Seattle, SEIU, WEA. So their sectors are growing fine. Oh yeah, teachers, yep. Healthcare workers, oh, of course. And the long-term care tax that they passed, which was really about the unions and creating more union jobs. So every other part, when it comes to employment, on the decline, bad news. But the government, service workers, teachers, they're doing just fine. So the government, as it grows, is taking care of its union buddies. Jan reiterated that Seattle is in a pretty bad place when it comes to occupancy rates for office space.
There was a significant increase in the vacancy rates in Seattle. The demand for office space is really low due to those work arrangements, the low employment growth and hybrid work arrangements. There is an index that's released each quarter for how much demand there is for office space by real estate platform, BTS, call it Office Demand Index. They track a couple of cities, and Seattle in recent years has been the lowest one. Currently, the demand for office space is roughly half of the pre-pandemic average.
Yeah, and you can blame, again, a little bit of that on the pandemic, but we're 6 years out of the pandemic. You have other cities who aren't dealing with that. You look at Bellevue, you would be hard-pressed to find some vacant office space in the city of Bellevue. And there's a reason why in Bellevue it might cost you $60 a square foot to get office space, and in Seattle you could probably score some for $15 a square foot. And they're, what, 15 miles apart? It's because Seattle is a much different city than Bellevue. And Seattle has certain taxes on businesses that Bellevue doesn't have. Although, you know, now they're all going to be hurting by this income tax on millionaires at the state level. And yeah, I mean, you've got, again, somebody said in the comments to me, what do you mean, Brandy, that tax revenue is going down? What I mean is that they're scaring all the businesses away. And businesses have been one of the big drivers of tax revenue for the city of Seattle, as have the wealthy. And so as they scare them away, they're going to get less money coming into their coffers. And so they then turn around and try to make up that revenue in other ways. But the city saw that with their projections for the jumpstart tax. The city of Seattle passed a jumpstart tax, which was a punishment tax if you pay your employees too much. So you have a high paying job, we're going to tax you. And they had a projection for how much revenue that would bring in. And they're way short of their projections, because what happened? Companies like Amazon took those high-paying jobs and they moved them to places like Bellevue, or they moved them out of state. So they're not getting the kind of revenue that they expected. So Seattle can clean up as much trash as it wants, but the real trash it needs to clean up is the socialist and progressive politicians. All right. Tom Steyer is absolutely nuts. Oh my gosh. So the billionaire front runner now in the race for governor of California, now that Eric Swalwell dropped out. I hate to say it, but I almost would rather Eric Swalwell get back in the race after hearing some of the things that Tom Steyer has put out about his platform. We'll discuss. First, if you're thinking about leaving the state or just relocating to a different part of Washington, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com to sell your home. You can see all sorts of good reviews about Wes and his team. This is from Jim H. 5 stars. We packed our bags and hit the road to a new state, but we jump at the chance to work with Wes again in a heartbeat. A giant shout out to Ebby for her incredible support, unwavering dedication and tireless effort. Together, they turned our long distance deal into a breezy walk in the park from beginning to end. Not often you will hear selling your home, especially as you already move out of state, described as a breezy walk in the park, but it is with Wes Jones and his team. So go to sellwithwes.com. You can go from Sell With Wes to Sold With Wes, peruse some of the recent listings they've been able to sell for clients, see what they can do for you. And also, I would say, get a market analysis from Wes, like first thing, because it's free. He'll just kind of go over, especially with all this new inventory coming on the market, because people are trying to leave the state, especially very wealthy people. It might take a little longer to sell your home. You might need to do a few more upgrades to your home to get the price that you want. And so all of that is really important to discuss with somebody who's going to give it to you straight. So Wes and his team, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, so Eric Swalwell out, which I'm really glad that I don't have to watch his cringy social media videos anymore, because I don't know if there was anybody worse at really forced social media engagement. But maybe we'll be begging for him to come back, even with all the gross stuff that he's accused of, because the new front runner is Tom Steyer. So Tom Steyer is a billionaire, which is so rich, isn't it? It's so rich that you have this side of the political aisle that's like, eat the rich. Billionaires are the enemy. And then they're like, oh, let's choose a billionaire to, and even the unions, let's endorse a billionaire to be the governor of the state. But he's no average billionaire. Oh no, he is one of them. He's one of them. So he's leading in the polls right now, just the latest. And there's a couple polls out, but this one, Steyer at 21%, Hilton, the Republican, at 18%, and Swalwell still getting 9%, because, you know, you have people who don't know maybe what happened and heard the news. Sure. I love that. So this is, again, this is post the news about Swalwell.
You know what this is also post is Trump's endorsement of Hilton, because originally Bianca was doing much better. And he's dropped since Trump endorsed Sheriff Hilton. Bianca. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but isn't it funny that Katie Porter, even post the news about Swalwell, was doing worse than Swalwell in the polls.
Funny.
He's not even in the race anymore, although his name will appear on the ballot. So I imagine there'll still be some people who vote for him,
sure.
Even though he's technically
not
running
anymore. Good, take some Democrat votes away.
So when Tom Steyer announced his bid, he said that these were his platform positions. He said, my priorities, single-payer health care, ban corporate PAC money, build homes you can afford, which, like, what does that mean? Build homes you can afford. I mean, to me, that means...
affordable housing.
Right. That means crap, you know, little matchstick homes, but... like,
what he means is government builds homes,
right,
you can afford.
Builds homes
not you can build a home.
It's like, well, I don't know. Maybe you shouldn't make it so hard to build a home and pull permits and all of those things.
Right.
I mean, still haven't rebuilt any of the homes that burned down during Newsom's wildfire. It says, close tax loopholes for corporations and billionaires, lower electric bills by 25%, as all the policies that they push in states like California increase electric bills. He said, make California a top 10 education state. Okay. And then he's putting out nonsense like this. How California can put ICE in jail. Literally wrote a story about how they can jail ICE agents. The true test of a leader is not who they disparage and attack, but who they defend and uplift. Donald Trump attacks and robs the most vulnerable in our society while protecting and enriching the most powerful. I made it clear, ICE must be abolished. And to be clear, not even Gavin Newsom has said that ICE needs to be abolished. He's been critical of ICE, but Tom Steyer says you need to abolish ICE. He said ICE is acting like a criminal organization, carrying out indiscriminate racial profiling and using violence, intimidation, terrorism, and the murder of Americans to extend Trump's rule by fear. It's not enough for Democrats to simply engage in rhetoric and stand against ICE or Trump. California must build a system that fights fire with fire. To stop this authoritarian takeover, we must counter ICE head on and go after both their agents on the streets and their leadership within the Department of Homeland Security. How do we do this? The same way we took on the mob. Put ICE agents and their leadership in jail for their crimes. This guy is as nuts as it gets. And as far as him being a billionaire, he's one of those very rare rich people who, you know, is willing to criticize themselves and their wealth. And, oh, I want to pay more as a billionaire.
It's time for billionaires like me and big corporations to buy into the future of California and be willing to pay more.
Okay,
a lot of
do
people
it
in
then.
California are acting as if we have a zero-sum game,
so
and they're defending their wealth, and they're trying to make sure that they minimize their taxes. I am not scared about paying more money. Working Californians are being priced out of this state. It is not okay. We are creating more than enough money in this state for us all to succeed together without anybody suffering. This is a state with values. This is a state where everybody moves up together. I think that everybody who's succeeded in this state owes a huge debt to the people who built this state and the working people who make this state run and work their asses off. We need to change our tax system. We need more revenue. We need it to be fair. And I pledge to do all of those things. This is not rocket science.
Yeah, and also it's not rocket science to write a check. I'm sorry, I keep going back to that. Unless he wants to write a check for 90% of everything he makes, so he's not a billionaire anymore, and whatever his fair, what is the fair share, you know? But I said this to the millionaires who were propped up as political puppets by Democrats here who said, I should be paying more. Literally, there's a website for that. You can write the U.S. Treasury a check. You can write the general fund a check. You can do the same in California. So I'll listen to his rants like that if he wants to write a check. So you lead the way. Be a leader. You write a check for the amount that you think is fair, that you want other millionaires and billionaires to pay into the California General Fund. And then we'll all take you seriously. Oh, and he got the California Teachers Association endorsement because they had endorsed Swalwell. Can't do that anymore. So quick like that to stop Tom Steyer. And that to me, whoever a teacher's union endorses is someone I literally would never vote for. So because they're, again, like the mafia. So they think that he's going to grow the size of government and pad their pockets in the process. So I don't know. We might be begging for a Governor Katie Porter.
Ugh.
How many horrible options in a state the size of California that is vast majority Democrats? That's the best that you can do. This intolerable billionaire, Katie Porter, who pours scalding hot mashed potatoes on her husband's head and berates her staff, or alleged sex predator Eric Swalwell?
Democrats, do you mean?
What did I say?
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, how bad can you do out of all the candidates? But the Republicans are not as bad.
Yeah, sure. I mean, they haven't had that kind of, yeah, I haven't heard of any of them pouring scalding hot mashed potatoes on their ex's head.
Right.
Or, you know, allegedly raping women and drugging them. So I haven't heard that about them. But really, that's the best that you can do as Democrats.
I guess it's who the Democrat machine will support, right?
But
so
why?
No normal people are supported by the machine because they're not extreme enough. So yeah, we just have to put enough in an extreme. They'll win anyway.
Well, by the machine is the unions. And so they have to have someone who will grow the size of government. And for instance, there's that guy, Mahan, who's like the moderate Democrat in the race, and he's not doing very well in the polling and doesn't have the support of the unions because he's called out like the homeless industrial complex, et cetera. And he is not going to give, you know, a blank check to union groups. He's not going to go and pad their pockets. And so they absolutely cannot support him, even though he doesn't have the baggage of a Swalwell or a Katie Porter or anything like that. So California's doomed. I think it's going to be very hard for a Republican to win in California. I think Republicans always get so jazzed, like, oh my gosh, now's our chance. And I'm not saying don't get excited and don't think that that's possible, because California did shift a little to the right.
Rally, man.
But it is still a deep blue state. But I don't know. Maybe, you know, Tom Steyer is just so fringe crazy that maybe there's a moment for Republicans there. One can only hope. All right, we'll get to subscriber comments. You guys were being mean to me in comments yesterday. I'm fragile, okay? I'm just a girl.
Oh, she was obsessing for like an hour.
Yeah, I had a very hard day today paying my taxes. And I feel, I woke up feeling fine and I left the house feeling poor, okay? So I need you to be gentle with me today. We'll get to comments coming up next. First, if you're thinking of saving money, maybe because you too had a big tax bill, reach out to our friends at Firstmark, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. It's a no-brainer because you have to have insurance anyway. So you just have somebody take a second look at it. And if they can save you money, great. If they can't, then what have you lost through that process? And so for so many Undivided viewers and listeners, they take time finally to take the Firstmark challenge. The folks at Firstmark go out, shop their market of carriers, and come back with their recommendations. We just got our latest kind of package of renewal suggestions from Firstmark for this coming year. And they're saving us $3,000. That's personal for Mike and I at home. And I was like, oh, wow. And for the same coverage that we had. So I think that's phenomenal. And if we had been with, you know, a different company or doing it on our own, I don't think that we would have seen that. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you and they're a local company. So I pick up the phone. If I have to call them, which is rare because they usually get in touch with me first, somebody literally answers the phone and they're a local human being, which is very nice. firstmarkinsurance.com. They work for you, not the insurance companies. Okay, some subscriber comments. Yeah, so I made an offhanded comment on the show on Monday. My precious angel of a dog, Lucky.
Didn't get to come today.
Who I love almost as much as my husband and who I've gone through quite a bit of trauma with in the last 3.5 months as she recovers from an infection from a knee surgery. And Nicole on Monday was here watching Lucky, and Lucky was licking her stitches, which is what landed her in the ER for a week, a couple weeks ago. And so I was like, you should have told me, I would have kicked her. I don't actually mean I'm going to kick my dog. A little nudge, like, no, Lucky, don't do that. So she doesn't rip her stitches back open. People are like, you said you're going to kick your dog. It's like, I'm not going to kick my dog.
Figure of speech.
I would have nudged her. Honey, no, I'm trying to prevent you from being injured. And then people were complaining that you don't read my comments. And it was somebody whose comments we read like 3 times a week. Well, it's Miranda. Give Miranda a break, okay? She's trying. Anyway, sob session over. On union mob bosses, Baron of Gray Matter, the unions aren't like the mob. They are like the Communist Party. They require representation in all levels of management and decision-making without having any stake in the business. They are leeches. R.M. Colm, they are copying and pasting everything from one Marxist to another across the country. Jerks take my names. Wouldn't employee-owned stores be the socialist ideal? Right?
Right.
Literally.
It's the idea.
Winco is a employee-owned store, but they're not union. So can't have it. Would rather have those people literally out of a job. Wild.
Because they're
wild.
Yeah, that's funny. Because it would literally be employing people in the communities to work at the store and then own their share of the store.
Yeah.
Ah, people.
Gosh. Nick Brown wasting 34,000 hours fighting Trump. Matt M. says, this way he keeps the mob off his back and the campaign donations rolling in because orange, man, bad. Sauce says, got to keep doing things to hide where the taxes are really going. Greg Olakis, I would love to hear Nick Brown's definition of election integrity. Yeah, something tells me his definition of election integrity is not requiring voter ID, because that definitely makes elections have more integrity.
I don't think they know what their definition is because they don't follow any of those rules.
Yeah. On Ferguson, bribing tech companies to please stay in Washington. I'll give you $500,000. Mm-hmm. Sauce, for the start of a GoFundMe for Bob and Nick's Uber. I got a super chat from Sauce for $20. For the start of a GoFundMe for Bob and Nick's Uber to hell. That's harsh. That's harsh.
That'd be expensive.
Yeah, I don't give a chuck. I've been slacking on my Boop sponsorship, so I'm making up for it. Boop, boop. Thank you. Old Sub Sailor, Ferguson's goal is to remake Washington State into a socialist state using the Saul Alinsky plan. He's a narcissist bully with a Napoleon complex. Lancelot Dufresne, every part of his government is steering us toward AI invasion and systems of support. Ernie Zeller, I watched a good, it's not even a good movie. It's an interesting movie yesterday. It's called, it's not even interesting, really. War Machine? Have you seen it?
What's it on?
So War Machine, it's that guy, that huge buff actor who the huge guy. Good looking.
Yes.
He played that Tom Cruise reboot of,
Jack.
That Reacher.
Oh, the Reacher guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, who just got in trouble for like beating up his neighbor in his driveway.
Yeah, but his neighbor deserved it. So he's like trying to go to Army Ranger school. It's like some promise he made to his brother.
Alan
and he's
Richin.
Trying to become, an Army Ranger. Mm-hmm. And then there's this, I don't want to ruin the movie for you, but there's like an earthly takeover of these like robots that, anyway, yes. It was very unexpected, but it reminds me of what she said with the AI invasion. It was it was like a surprise invasion. I thought it was this whatever war movie, just totally run-of-the-mill war movie about someone's grit and determination to overcome obstacles and save lives. Then it was like, bam, space robot. I was like, oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah,
you did you watch Reacher, by the way?
Yeah, I love Reacher.
I love the show, although it is gory.
It's like, super gory.
And very realistic looking.
Yeah,
it's
this
very
movie
creepy.
Was gory as well. Mm-hmm. Ernie Zeller, is there a clause in Bob's gift that tells the tech company, if you leave the state due to our high taxes, you have to give the money back? I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's something. There you go. Sunny Days PNW, while he's funding jobs with the $1 to $2 million, which seems like backdoor luring while other businesses flee, his refusal to fund the fight against retail crime will lead to higher business costs and shutdowns, like the Fred Meyer store, costing more jobs than he's creating with a business that doesn't need our taxpayer dollars. His decisions are asinine. Right. You explained it better than I did. Mm-hmm. It's like the last kind of company that needs. I'm not asking for tech companies to be funded by the government. I'm not asking for them to get government tax breaks or subsidies or whatever it is. Just leave them alone. Let them build. Let them grow. Don't target them for undue taxation. They don't need like free taxpayer support. They make enough money. That's really what bothers me here. The retail theft thing, that's a problem the government created. And so I do think the government has a role in stopping it because the government created that problem because they stopped prosecuting people. They vilified police. Bob Ferguson vilified police. So we have no police officers anymore. And so, there's more of an obligation for them to spend that $500,000 helping businesses out of the hellhole that was created by bad public safety policies.
You know, what does worry me about the going back to the brawn and the congressional seats, things like that. But it's scary because the people that are leaving the state are because they're frustrated with all of this are the people in those districts.
Yeah.
The people that have been just kind of trying to mind their own business and live in these places that are a little less blue. And the blue is just taken over and like seeped into all their communities and scared them off.
Yeah, I agree.
That's really scary.
All right. So apparently Miranda told everyone if they didn't hit the like button, she would start making anonymous phone calls to the IRS to report that they're skipping out on their taxes. Mm-hmm. And Sauce gave $20 to the Super Chat to help with Miranda's phone bill after all the anonymous IRS calls. I don't think anyone can call the IRS anonymously. They know who you are as soon as they pick up the phone. But yeah, the IRS can
figure it out.
Can you know what?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
kick rocks. Mm-hmm. All right. We'll get to our closing sanity check. A really nice video of Billy Ray Cyrus dodging a question that was setting him up to criticize President Trump. I wish more people would handle questions about President Trump like that. First, are you worried about the future of your retirement portfolio? And I think it's right to be concerned about it. You know, how much do you know about the risk management of your money manager? That's what Bulwark Capital specializes in. And I think going to our friend Zach Abraham for a second opinion is there's no downside to it. So if you're overwhelmed with maybe what's happening in Iran, noise from AI, crypto, and tech, whatever it might be, you deserve to know whether your portfolio is positioned to cut through all the market noise that's happening. So reach out to Zach for a free Know Your Risk portfolio review. He'll go over the fundamentals of value investing, a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management, and how they're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. While you're there, subscribe to Zach's daily market recap, again, at knowyourriskpodcast.com. And Zach's off this week, so we won't have a new episode of Swamp Watch. But I know we'll have a lot to talk about when he gets back. Why are you looking at me like that, Nicole? Am I wrong on that?
I think we do have one.
I thought you told me he was off
this
week.
No, I know.
Okay, hey, don't confuse the people.
Okay. I think there's one in the can. So
oh, is there? Okay, all right.
That we're working on.
Ignore me. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Okay, let's get to our closing sanity check. Billy Ray Cyrus was on Sky News, and they were talking about Trump versus the Pope, you know, the whole beef going down. And the host clearly was setting up Billy Ray Cyrus to criticize the president, but he didn't take the bait.
It's pretty divisive in the States at the moment. Does a little voice need to tell the president, don't be so divisive, bring people together?
I can't even speak to his voice. He's the president. And my dad was a Democrat and served in the Kentucky legislature for over 20 years. And but my dad always said, when the president asks you to do something, you do it, son. And so I've had both Democratic and Republican presidents. I've served with Bill Clinton, with President Obama, Mr. Bush's dad, and Mr. Trump. You know, being president's a tough job. I pray for our country. I pray for our president, and I pray for our world.
How nice is that? That's what entertainers need to do. I genuinely don't care your position on politics. But also, you don't see news hosts, and you didn't see news hosts during Biden saying, you know, things are tough in America. Things are divisive. Should President Biden maybe not say that the greatest domestic threat to America is right-wing Christians? You know, things like that. They'll only do it when it comes to Donald Trump. And by the way, yes, I mean, at some point in his life, I wish more people had told President Trump to tone it down a little bit. But at this point, he is who he is, so I don't think that would work anyway. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Happy tax day or unhappy tax day to all of you. The IRS, we make our money the old-fashioned way. We steal it. Bastards. See you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. And while you're at it, if you haven't subscribed to support our show, you can do that. It's just $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. See you tomorrow.